And August being Women's Month, we now talk about the University of Johannesburg and South African Board of for People's Practices Research Interpretations on Women's Matters. And joining us for this discussion is Professor Anita Bosch, who is the lead researcher with the Women in the Workplace Research Program, but she is also in the Department of Industrial Psychology and People Management at the University of Johannesburg. And we also have Professor Hugo Pinard, who is Director, Employment Practice with Cliff Decker Hofmeyer Inc. Thank you very much for joining us, Profs, and good morning to you and welcome.
Thank you so much.
Have you voted? Are you going to vote? Are you early birds or, like me, are you going after all your other commitments?
I'll be going afterwards.
You'll be going afterwards, yes. Professor Bosch.
Likewise, yeah.
Professor Pinard. Okay, let's start with you, Professor Bosch. What is this research all about? I mean, why was it conducted?
Well, I think the important thing about Women's Month and women in the workplace specifically is that issues around things like pregnancy, pay, and so forth are very often not looked at other than Women's Month. So mm-hmm. what we try and attempt through the Women in Workplace Research Report is to pick a particular topic for every year, of which this is pregnancy in the workplace this year, and then gather a lot of experts to write opinion pieces on how this influences women. So particularly about pregnancy, pregnancy is a phenomenon that my chapter is titled Pregnancy is Here to Stay. And some people say, yes, well, that's quite obvious.
Yeah.
But in the workplace, it doesn't seem to be quite obvious. And very often when women fall pregnant or when they apply for a job and they get asked whether they intend falling pregnant soon, they get discriminated against.
Mm. And basically what you're saying is that we need to start normalizing pregnancy because it is a normal, it's normal that women would fall pregnant, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's a normal human occurrence.
Yes.
Because remember, pregnancy doesn't happen from women alone. And so it's a societal issue to deal with, but yet in the workplace, it's not normal. It's
That's
not
a good thing to remember, that it's not the woman who impregnates herself.
Yes.
Professor Pinard, a point that is made is that if organizations and companies wish to retain competitive advantage, they need to reorganize the value of their female talent, and they need to respect the decisions that they make, their maternity decisions that they make. I'd like you to talk about what you find happens currently in the workplace and as far as the reality of pregnant women is concerned.
I think that discrimination starts sometimes before employment and during interviews, when females in particular are interviewed and the employers may ask certain specific questions pertaining to the employee's age, the employee's marital status, and the family planning. Of course, that's prohibited in terms of law. So it actually starts there already.
Does it get asked at that point?
It does, but of course it's prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if the employee is not appointed, the employee can potentially take that matter to the labor court, because it constitutes a form of discrimination and it's protected in terms of the Employment Equity Act as well as our constitution.
Mm.
But then as far as the workplace is concerned, of course you want to become the employer of choice. And we've seen examples of that in Australia, Westpac Bank in particular, where they look at facilities for female employees. Just want to make another point, Anita, on the point she raised, and that is, you know, it's not just about pregnancy nowadays, it goes beyond that. It's about surrogacy and all of that. And you need protection for that environment and for same-sex parents when they adopt babies.
Mm.
So you also need protection in terms of that. And, of course, there's case law now to support that.
All right. And we'll talk in greater detail about that. There's a funny feedback sound that we're getting, but my technician will come and look at that and sort that out. But we'll continue this conversation in the meantime. Talk about how we compare, Professor Bosch, to global standards when it comes to human resource practices regarding women.
Well, Hugo will be able to give you from a legal perspective the comparisons. I think what's very interesting is in writing my chapter, I had a look at the global fertility rate. And the World Bank has a whole table per country of how many children on average a woman will have in her fertile years. What's interesting about that particular analysis is that all countries roughly are stagnating or are starting to show a relative a lower level than 1960 in terms of fertility rates, except Africa and the central part of Africa, where women have on average more than 5 children per fertile woman. So with regards to comparisons, and then, sorry, in Bolivia and Guatemala, those are the other South American countries. So with regards to the arrangements for women, I think South Africa is relatively well placed in terms of legislation. Naturally, there can be lots of improvements. But in the rest of the world, in general, the protection is not always great. Hugo will come in here and be able to fill us in on where we, usually the same Scandinavian countries, we see better protection for women and an inclusiveness of parenthood. So where maternity leave is not specific to women only, but that men can also share in that, or the life partner to the individual that's having the child. But South African law is quite specific about a woman being protected. Our constitution has it entrenched that pregnancy and even the word birth is mentioned in the constitution, and that is protected. But still in practice, people are not taking that up in the right way. And in general, it is viewed that pregnant women are a hassle factor to the workplace. They're deemed to be unproductive. They have to be taken off production lines as soon as they announce that they're pregnant. And then sort of what do you do with them? And there's a lot of animosity very often, especially amongst blue-collar workers, then when men feel that the women are going on leave, which to my mind, I say very often in public forums, I think it should be called maternity work leave. The word work should be inserted because it's not...
Because you're not lounging about doing nothing.
So there's a lot of animosity that steps in because of the protection that women do enjoy.
Professor Pienaar?
True, and you'll see in the European countries in particular, there's much better protection for the female in the workplace, particularly when you deal with pregnancy. And you'll see, for instance, there's additional sort of leave allowed in Germany for cesarean babies and for multiple pregnancies. So you have that sort of protection. Of course, what we must find in South Africa is the balance between the employee and the employer. If you allow too much protection, it creates a bigger gap between the employed and the unemployed. And one must find and safeguard that sort of balance, also to determine who should be protected and what sort of payment and by whom. Should the state step in and make a contribution or not? And those are all questions that we must answer. If you place too much onus on the employer will say, well, when it becomes less attractive to employ female employees. And of course, you don't want that. You want the opposite, because we have more females in our country as opposed to males.
Absolutely. Right, we're talking this morning about the protection of women in the workplace with regards to women's reproductive matters. Can I put it that way? All right, and we're taking your calls and your SMSs if you'd like to contribute to this part of our conversation. 0891 104207 is our telephone number. You can send an SMS to 34701. That's 34701, and share your views with us. We'd like to hear from you. One of the biggest issues still, Professor Bosch, is pay disparities between men and women in the workplace. Talk about what you think should be done to correct this. I mean, how do we navigate the space?
Yeah. Last year's report was on equal pay for equal value. By the way, these reports can be downloaded for free from the South African Board for People Practices website. Mm-hmm. And they're written specifically for HR practitioners also as measures of implementation of change. So what we wrote about last year is really how within pay structures, there are certain aspects to a pay structure. In other words, a large company, when they employ people, they have a particular set of bands according to which you get paid, levels at which you're pegged, that those things become much more transparent, that pay practices in general are more transparent. But there's also the downside to that, that if your employees are not well educated about how the company's finances works and how pay structures work, and you just open everything up, because of a lack of insight, people sometimes misidentify aspects that they think might be discriminatory. But if companies invest in training up people, informing them about this, and then becoming much more transparent on these practices, firstly, that's a big step. The other thing is also for female employees to be informed about their worth. And this is something that we find that I think has a lot to do with the way that women are socialized, but then also the gender norms that exist in society, that if a woman should ask for money, firstly, if she has enough courage to ask for a raise, it is not always viewed as behavior that a woman should be taking. She's seen as being too overly assertive, perhaps a troublemaker, and all of that factors into her level of success then at getting that pay raise. But it's about being informed and asking questions and asking around outside of your company then to people that work in the same industry, what they're being paid, what their benefits are, because remember, it's not always just the physical pay package, but the benefits that go with that. And then starting to lobby within your organization around those issues.
Mm. It actually saddens me when you talk about the fact that women need to be courageous to ask for pay, almost as if they're not deserving of an increase.
Yes. And in my career, when I've served in positions where I'm able to make decisions about people's starting salary, I've been very firm about that in terms of ensuring that women really in general, other than when there's a very specific reason for it not happening, to start at the middle of a particular band. But because what I'm finding is that if you start off at a much lower level, it takes you forever to try and catch up.
Yeah.
And very often women don't renegotiate. So you go into a job interview, you get offered a particular amount, and you accept, because you're just too glad to have that job.
Exactly. Absolutely.
That. Yes.
All right. We are talking this morning about how women should be protected in the workplace with regards to issues of reproduction. Let's go to Jay. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning to you, Rowena, and to your guests. My question is in regard to what happens when a woman decides to have three kids and she wants to have them as soon as possible and get it over and done. Number one, if she decides to have a baby, you know, first year, second year, and third year, then she will have to be given that maternity leave, the pay, and so forth, which she has a right to. But what happens in the process? Wouldn't the company suffer and production and so forth? In regard to me, now, if I have a domestic, now, if this is going to happen now, wouldn't I have quite an inconvenience? I got to find somebody else to train and so forth. And here she is, I am used to, and then she decides to have three babies in a row. Wouldn't that become quite a burden on me and, or for that matter, the company and so forth?
But you know that she's also protected in the Constitution.
Yes,
but I'd like the experts. Okay.
But I'm sure the constitution or the company can come to a decision, you know, minimum to a maximum time within the period that you're working. Can you space yourself or decide about, you know, don't inconvenience your employer at any time. Make it such a way. I mean, then again, as you said, it's nature's call that women fall pregnant.
All right, Jay. Yeah. Once again, Jay brings to the fore the inconvenience, and that's the word she uses, of being a woman. Mm. How can it be inconvenient being a woman?
Professor
Pinas?
Well, I'm smiling because there's protection for female employees, and the specific protection that they may not be dismissed and their employment is protected once they return from maternity leave. There's a 4 months unpaid leave. Some employers do pay up to a certain limit, and there's UIF benefits that the employee can claim. But irrespective of the number of births, the employee is protected and cannot be dismissed on account of
But that. Does that happen in reality? I mean, what happens on the ground in reality? That's in the Constitution. Our protections are guaranteed in the Constitution. But what happens on the ground? What do you find happens?
Sadly, you see that as we have with whistleblowers and all of those, that you have all the protection in the law. But we know in reality it's career limiting to litigate against your employer. That's a reality at the workplace.
Earlier on, you were talking about the fact that it's not just pregnancy that we should be looking at, but you mentioned surrogacy as well and same-sex parents as well. Talk about the realities around those situations.
Well, there's recent case law which provides protection for those employees and in particular maternity leave and maternity benefits. Of course, the long-term effect of this is more difficult because let's say you have two parents, same-sex parents, and each parent goes to the different employers and asks for 4 months unpaid leave. Of course, if it's unpaid itself, it's a deterrent in the sense of taking it. But we don't have legislation to deal with that particular situation, except that we have protection for 4 months unpaid leave, maternity leave, and same-sex parents would then have that benefit. The case before the court was in respect of one employee that claimed that and was successful in that regard.
So we don't have legislation around same-sex parenting and taking leave, you say?
We have protection for unions and in terms of legislation to protect same-sex marriages and partnerships, but there's no specific legislation dealing with the pregnancy or surrogacy under those circumstances.
Talk about what the majority of South African women choose to do. Do they primarily choose their careers over the family, or do they combine the two? Do they wait a little bit with childbearing whilst the childbearing years are there? Or what happens?
Yeah. Well, it really depends on, I think primarily the primary decision point is whether you can economically afford this. What we do see is that in general, and I'm generalizing now, that there are differences in patterns between white and black women. So black women tend to stay in their careers and have children and move back into the workplace. But again, I mean, there would be individuals that don't fit this pattern. And for white women, there used to be the pattern starting to change, but quite a level of acceptance that once you get into childbearing years, you'll exit. It was referred to as similar metaphor to a highway. You'll off-ramp, be with the kids for a bit, and then some women would on-ramp again.
Yeah.
But obviously, the on-ramp is not always at the place where you want to on-ramp.
Mm.
And so that complicates your career in a sense. For instance, career breaks are not viewed as things that employers really like. It's frowned upon, means that you're not as committed to your career, perhaps, somehow. Even though, you know, you were very committed to another cause at that particular point in time. By the way, if men take career breaks, they have it worse off. So that is viewed as really career limiting if a man does that. So with regards to the patterns, we are finding that women are sometimes, because of economic reasons, able to exit, look after children for a period of time, sometimes have some form of part-time work in that period, or no formal paid work, because I want to stress again, it is work, looking after children.
Oh,
it's
indeed.
Just not being paid for.
Yeah, indeed. The payment is in different ways because it is just so fulfilling.
Yes.
So when people do take career breaks, you find that when they do on-ramp eventually, they on-ramp further backwards on the highway.
Yes.
For both men and women.
Yes. And that is also something that very often causes discomfort and a sort of an identity crisis for the individuals that are trying to on-ramp again. They usually on-ramp into a grouping where there's much younger people working with them, that challenge of dealing with that then. But there's also multiple ways, and we find with women's careers, there's a particular theory called kaleidoscope career theory, where it is stated that women seek, when they're on-ramp, a greater level of authenticity. And so very often then they move into jobs that are not even perhaps part of what they did in their early career, but it has morphed into other ways. Another phenomenon is that we're finding many more women becoming entrepreneurs because of the flexibility that that type of work gives them. They become their own boss. And in that sense, it doesn't matter whether they start early or late or have to go and fetch a child in the middle of the day, because it's on their own time.
And is this with both black and white women?
Both black and white women, although, remember, black women didn't have the opportunities in our country specifically to work in formal employment at the levels where they are presently. And so, to a great extent, they are making use of the opportunities, taking up very senior positions, and staying then. Because if you don't stay and you exit and you take a career break, that in itself is viewed as limiting.
Mm. And seeing that women do take up these very senior positions, and the fact that more and more women are in key managerial positions, what are the implications in terms of policy for employers, Professor Pinard?
I think employers need to decide at the outset, I want to become an employer of choice, and then accommodate those females when these in the go on maternity leave. But that's a policy decision, and you'll see in some countries they differ between larger and smaller scale employers. In the US, for instance, above 50 employees, there's better protection than for the lower number of employees.
And do employers rethink their policies in this way generally in South Africa?
I think there's appetite for it, yes. Mm. Certainly for those progressive employers that do want to have more women employed and take it up. We've recently completed a study, and I unfortunately can't give all of the results because it's in examination right now, but a student of mine, Ms. Masvinge, did a study on women mechanics, and they're trainees. And in this trainee period, when they fall pregnant, what happens to them? And this particular company asked us to come in and investigate this because they want to improve the conditions of women. So I think there certainly is an appetite to look at this. And also where you find, I find in general, men that have daughters, usually when they get confronted with the issues that their daughters deal with, they start getting insight into a different way of living. And very often they are then in senior decision-making roles and start giving effect to change in that way.
All right. We'll continue this conversation with Professor Bosch and Professor Pinard, talking about the kinds of protections that women need in the workplace. It's 5 to 11.